What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Rebranded Safety. This week we are going back into August edition of the iOS magazine. There's another awesome article. They seem to have been on a roll that month, all about behavioral safety and individual latent error detection. I found it fascinating, something that absolutely blights my life inside and outside of work. So let's get into the podcast.
Health and safety is almost a victim of its own success.
Weird and oppressive regime of health and safety regulation.
A huge fire engulfs a tower block.
Children being forced to wear goggles to play conkers at school.
Worst oil field disaster, 164 dead.
Rebranding Safety, the modern health and safety podcast, crushing the stereotype. And your host, James McPherson. Okay, so there was an article in iOSH magazine in August that I read. Well, there's quite a few that I read. Point proven, because a couple of them are on the podcast. So there was quite a lot in there that was interesting, is what I'm trying to say. Right, we're off to a good start. Basically, this one was called Error Alert. I'll link in the description for you guys to grab and have a read if you want to. Same procedure as usual. There's a word there that I know it's really simple and I'm missing it, and I don't know where it is. Anyway, same as usual. Maybe yes. As what I normally do is I've gone through it, I've read it, I've highlighted some of my favourite bits, I'm going to read them out, and I may or may not have added my 10 pence worth. So let's get into it then. So firstly, the introduction, the article's in a behavioural safety section called Error Alert, by Paul Smith. He introduced it as, researchers call it individual latent error detection, or ILED. It's a phenomenon we all recognise in our behaviour at home and at work. We settle down for the night, but we suddenly remember we haven't locked the back door. We iron our best shirt or blouse before setting off to that big family reunion, and then, a couple miles down the road, we suddenly recall that the iron might still be on. Or at work, we suddenly realise that we can't go to meeting A because we've already committed to meeting B. We open our calendars to check and find it is indeed so. This is something that just runs my life. I have to check the door, like, before I go to bed. If I come downstairs to pick something, let's say I left my charger downstairs, I have to recheck the door. Maybe it's OCD, I'm not sure. Leave the house, if there is even an inkling that I may or may not have locked the door, I need to go back and check. So if I'm in the car with Sherry and Sherry goes, did we lock the door? I can't go, yep, I definitely locked the door. Even if I know I have, I have to go back and check it. I always do this. I have done this so many times where I've drove so far away and thought, I need to go back and check the door. It feels uncomfortable in me. So I found this article quite personally intriguing, let alone professionally. So let's move on to the next section. The original research identified ILEDs as a distinct phenomenon was carried out in the UK's Royal Navy, specifically during aircraft engineering operations on ships and inland-based air squadrons. It takes a little imagination to see that the consequences of a simple failure. He continues on, but you can imagine what he's going to say. You know, you can imagine the consequences of a simple failure on, you know, any kind of aircraft engineering, especially in the military. So they did research into ILED, which is primarily where a lot of the stuff's come from in this article, I should imagine. So let's move on then. So we need only look at some of the disasters in oil, gas and transport sectors for the part played by simple errors, often made in stressful moments, to become apparent. Starting up equipment that had bits missing, Piper Alpha, pumping, and let's just turn the page, flammable liquids into vessels that were already full, Texas City refinery explosion, Bunsfield fuel depot fire in Hertfordshire, taking a roll-on, roll-off ferries to sea with their bow doors open, or Insecure, capsized of MS Hemerald of the Free Enterprise in the North Sea, and MS Estonia in the Baltic. Spring to mind. Now, they're all quite large, popular. What's the word I'm looking for? They're quite... what's the friggin' word? I can't remember how to speak today. They're all very popular incidents. Most of us are aware of those, especially kind of like Bunsfield and Piper Alpha. You know, we are fully aware of most of these stuff. And yes, they are simple errors. I think it's worth noting that, you know, in my opinion, which they do kind of touch on in here, is that, you know, behavior is defined by the environment. You know, there's no such thing as human error, in my opinion. But that's open to debate, I suppose. But I genuinely do believe that, you know, we create the environments that we behave in. So this concept is extremely interesting, that kind of, you know, if you're working in those high risk industries, especially where, you know, you're supposed to have done something and then you go on your off shift, you go for lunch or whatever, you go to bed and you realise, shit, I haven't done that, you know, just... huge, absolutely huge. So let's move on. This brings us to the light bulb moment that led the Royal Navy Air Engineer Officer Commander Justin Seward to investigate ILED in more detail. One day, an off-watch engineer phoned in to query whether he had carried out a procedure correctly. Seward discerned a pattern of these recall of possible error moments and realize their potential implications for safety. So there was obviously a trend of people thinking that they'd made a possible error and just ringing up to check. Now, firstly, I think that's a great sign of a good kind of ownership of their roles. You know, people were, and this is probably inherent in the military, I don't know, I've never worked in the military, but that kind of phone call to say, look, I think I've done this wrong, can you double check? For me, I'd be well impressed if I got that phone call. One, you've rang up, you've purposely gone out of your way to ring up because you think you've made an error, to tell me that you think you've made an error, which a lot of people in nowadays in everyday life would think, oh, I'm not going to tell them. Something goes wrong, they'll think it was me. It's that kind of, I need to ring up and check that I've done this right or wrong, because if I haven't, something could go wrong. So for me, that's a big... signal, a big sign of positive culture to a point, but a good positive attitude towards the work they've done and realization of the risk that they are, the risk of what they're doing potentially. So anyway, this continues on. He says, in the Navy, what's that song? Anyway, moving on, James, stop getting distracted. FYI, if you do get this article, right, I don't know if anyone's seen it, but there's like a video on YouTube of these guys doing like this kind of really stupid walking dance thing with this really big smile on their face and this really bad dancing. I think it's hilarious. Anyway, the guy in the image of this article, it looks like he's walking in that exact video, and it's extremely distracting. I wish this was a video I could show you, but it's not. Anyway, moving on. I'll start that section again. So, it continues on then. He says, in the Navy, we have many factors already stacked in our favour. For example, in a military environment, we are fortunate to have highly trained and disciplined people who follow robust systems. What's more, they typically have a very high degree of safety awareness and consciousness, and yet errors were occurring and people were concerned about them. I think that goes to show that you can focus on competence, you can focus on procedure, you can focus on so much stuff and still things go wrong, which was really interesting. You know, well, they're talking a high degree of safety awareness and consciousness. You know, I like that phrase, consciousness. I think for me, that's like, you know, it's you're conscious of risks and hazard. It's a nice way to say that. You know, so he seems quite proud. He seems quite, confident in his systems, yet had acknowledged that there was something going wrong. So they basically identified this phenomenon, which I thought was quite good of them to kind of spot that and not just, you know, I think we all kind of fall victim to that kind of, oh, we're just surrounded by idiots attitude and et cetera, et cetera. We just think, you know, oh, God, can't rely on common sense anymore kind of thing. And I think it's good that they've gone, well, hang on a minute. Why are we still getting problems? We've got a high level of safety consciousness and awareness. We've got robust systems, etc. We've got, you know, a good disciplined system within the military. And yet we're still having issues. So instead of just writing off that their squad or whatever they call them was full of idiots, they looked into it, researched it, which I thought was good. So then they break this down into different sections, but I won't break that down. I can't read the whole thing. It's like 4 pages long. But let's continue on. So Stanton says, so Neville Stanton is Professor of Human Factors and Transport of Southampton University. So Stanton says, we use schemas, mini maps for how we do things, but we also have a mental process in which the mind compares what we have done with what we should have done. This involves both the conscious and the subconscious. I thought that was fascinating because, if I'm honest, the human brain and psychology just fascinates me anyway. But I just love that kind of that kind of thing of, like, you know, our subconscious is comparing what we are consciously doing. So we are consciously comparing what we are doing, but we are also subconsciously comparing. So then when we remove ourselves from that situation, we can compare even more because we're not in the moment. Which I just find fascinating. So I'll continue on anyway. So a system approach that promotes safety behaviours both at the organisational level and among individuals and teams is vital. But we need to recognise that highly trained and experienced workers naturally habituate to the requirements of the job they have learn to perform. So I thought that was fascinating to a point that you can procedural the shit out of this stuff, you can competence the shit out of this stuff, you can have some extremely intelligent, highly competent people and they will still develop habits. If we do something all the time, it becomes a habit and they will habituate what they do. So this is where I find shadowing exercises and kind of things sometimes fall down. I remember, and this is a real, real simple kind of comparison, you know, we're probably talking about like aircraft pilots and people doing some real serious shit in this article, but, you know, if I kind of really drum it back to, you know, probably what you guys are doing, which is this kind of everyday role, we think about these kind of shadowing things. So a lot of people kind of, you would get a new member of staff in, you'll maybe give them an induction. So let's say manufacturing, you would give them an induction and you would give them to an operator and operate maybe a shadowing scheme to train them on how to do it. And hopefully that's in line with some kind of standard operating procedures and risk assessments, etc., etc. Now, who you have doing the being the shadowy, is that, no, the shadower, be it producing the shadow, how would you say that? You, whoever is the operator, would be the better way to say it, you know, is imparting their wisdom, their knowledge of the machine. So inherently, you're probably going to pick somebody who's been there a long time. You need to be aware of that person's habits. So, and I'll put this into context, I remember doing a fire evacuation drill and we were observing this machine quite stealthily when we'd set the alarm off. So two of my colleagues had set the alarm off and me and one of the managers of this area kind of up on the gangway trying to stay hidden and just kind of observing what would happen. Not to kind of whack them with a stick or anything, to just see how people react. So anyway, the alarm went off and this apprentice that we had on, machine apprentice, just immediately reacted perfectly. The only thing he didn't do was shut down the machine, but we would have never required or expected an apprentice to have done that. The machine operator was not there at the time. They were out getting coffee. So the apprentice did everything that they're supposed to do and then immediately evacuated the factory. I was so impressed. Just went to walk out, was just about to leave through the fire exit door. Operator comes chuntering in and goes, what are you doing? And the apprentice quite rightly said, well, the fire alarm's going off, mate. We need to go. And this operator went, "Nah, mate, roll of shutters ain't come down, it's not a real fire." Back you go. The person that we were asking to train this new member of staff had now locked into this person's consciousness and this person's subconsciousness and their heuristics, their anchors in what they do, that a fire is only when those roller shutters come down. Now, this did a couple of things for us. It told us that maybe we need to do a drill with the roller shutters come down, which we did do, and the fucking factory lost its shit, which I thought was hilarious. Hilarious and concerning. But this gentleman had developed this habit, this perception, that an evacuation was only when these roller shutters come down. And he had then passed that habit on to a new member of staff. So I think it's important that we acknowledge that people develop habits. Now, habits can be good and they can also be bad. We've acknowledged that, you know, there's a bad habit. But sometimes people might develop a quicker way to do things. You know, they might spot a better way to do things. Bear in mind, you know, you're a safety advisor or you're the business owner. It might have been a long time since you've run that machine. You might have never run that machine. So these operators might come in and be a bit intuitive and be a bit innovative and think, well, actually, can't we do this way? And then they develop a habit of doing that. Maybe they don't want to tell anybody. And then one day you come along and be like, you're not following a procedure. And they say, yeah, but look at this. Then we can start thinking, well, okay, actually, that's a much better way to do things. But I just find it's interesting that, you know, we're getting here from a professor of human factors that, you know, no matter who you are, how heavily trained you are, how highly competent you are, you know, we naturally habituate to requirements of the job. So another way of looking at that is, if you naturally habituate to the requirements of the job, so now we're not talking about people that are creating their own habits. Now we're talking about the job itself becoming a habit. This is where it is vital when you're developing the requirements of the job, the procedures, the policies, the risk assessment, you're involving the workers. You know, if you just deliver safety in a pizza box and say, you know, this is how we do things, they're going to develop a habit of that job requirement, to what they're saying here. So if we then look at it from that point of view, is that those procedures have got to be spot on. But as human nature and as machines evolve and get older, etc., etc., things change, products change, life changes, people change, and inherently over a long time, procedures can become wrong. To no fault of anybody, they just inherently become outdated, old, we might find a better way to do it, whatever. So it's massively important that we are constantly reviewing this stuff. We're constantly engaging with our workers. We're constantly communicating. You know, if we have got a manual, a procedure book, whatever you want to call it, health and safety file, and it's covered in fucking dust, then it's providing no value to the business and is therefore completely pointless. Let's move on. The next bit I've got highlighted, the danger here is desensitization to the task's risks. Even in high consequence sectors such as construction, healthcare, nuclear power, this is often misinterpreted as complacency, which is rare in workers in safety critical organisations. When workers habituate to their workplace, they become desensitized to the risk. Undetected errors can manifest in the safety system, especially when those workers are insufficiently aware of their actions, brackets sometimes termed unsafe acts by safety professionals, to close brackets. This in turn can lead to undetected errors, brackets forming a latent condition, close brackets, in the safety system, weakening the organization's overall performance. Interesting point there, which I'm going to do a bit extra research into, but misinterpreted as complacency, which is rare in workers in safety critical organizations. Interesting. I found that just that one line kind of pricked my ears up, if that makes sense. I would read this, and I did read the first line of this, you know, where we're talking about becoming desensitized to tasks. I was like, well, that's just a posh way to say complacency. But desensitization is a different thing, isn't it? It's like, it's if we lose sense in our fingers, we still know that the hot tap is hot because we probably, you know, lived our life and now we've become desensitized in our fingers because of some crazy disease or whatever. I don't know. But we know that it's a hot tap, so and we're using it to get hot water, but we touch it and we've got no sense in our fingers. So it's not the fact that we don't know it's a risk, it's the fact that we've become desensitized to said risk. Which I thought is a quite a different way to look at it, and I think that's definitely got legs in it. And I wanted to say it because, you know, I wanted to say that it pricked my interest, it really got my attention, that line, and I think there's some more. It's food for thought for me anyway, especially. And I would be really interested to see what you think of that kind of one-liner. Maybe we approach Neville and let's see if he wants to come and talk about it. I shall make that my mission. We'll find him on LinkedIn because he sounds like a very interesting gentleman. Let's move on then. Next section that I highlighted. The research suggests we need to ensure relevant cues are in place to trigger recall. Also unconscious or semi-conscious control modes associated with skilled workers need to be brought back into the conscious so that people reconnect with the world around them. So, you know, the simplest way I thought about this is when, you know, if I need to make sure I don't forget something, I will put a post-it on the door. If I really don't want to forget, I might even put a post-it on a car. I remember working with a guy volunteering at a youth club I was, and this gentleman, literally, his car was covered in post-its. It was unbelievable. They were everywhere. You couldn't sit down. There was just post-its everywhere. And I just thought, you know, this has gone past the point of a to-do list. There is so much here, you are never going to do some of this stuff. Anyway, slightly digress there. So, you know, it's about ensuring there are cues in place to trigger the recall. So here we're talking about, you know, it could be signage, but it's strategic signage, I think. You know, you might put signage in place, but if, let's think about it. If we just put signage up in random, then what's the point? You know, and we could put too much signage, we could put not enough. But we're talking about recall and cues to create recall. So it's slight things you might think about. You know, you could have something simple being like, have you turned your machine off in the coffee machine? Right by the coffee machine, sorry. You know, it's that kind of thing. So they think, shit, no, I haven't. And they just go back. But then it's like, well, that sign's there for longer than a year, 2 years. It becomes things, something you ignore. So it's also about kind of, randomly changing them, regularly changing them, et cetera, et cetera. Thinking as well, like, you know, overuse of signage, in my opinion. Yeah, we are desensitized to the hot tap, in my opinion, because every hot tap warning sign has, has a warning sign. So we are desensitized to that sign. So actually, we don't know now whether that hot tap is hot or not, or too hot. You know, if it's too hot, that's when you need a warning sign. So actually, we don't know that. We can't differentiate between an okay hot tap, so we're not going to scold ourselves, and a hot tap that is not safe. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for, which is not safe, because the sign is everywhere. But yet, I have this argument time and time again with some safety professionals. They just don't want to acknowledge that putting too much signage up somewhere and too many cues and too many kind of prompts is just, it's you call completely missing the trick. You know, we were talking about the nudge theory, you know, and I get it and I like it, but if we're nudging people all the friggin' time, they'll just get pissed off with the nudge, and then they'll get used to the nudge, and then the nudge becomes pointless. It's about using all of these things. You know, you could get a bit of nudge theory, you could get a bit of, you know, visual literacy, which we talked about in another podcast. You could get a little bit of training, a little bit of competency, you know, a little bit of procedural. documents, you know, all these things all come together like one jigsaw. You know, they're all parts, they're all integral cogs in the management of health and safety. So it's important to acknowledge that, you know, when we're thinking about creating cues and signage, I'm just using that as one example. There are probably loads of other ways that we could do it, conversations, you know, but if we're going to go with something, then it's got to be strategic. So always ask yourself, I'm doing this, but is it delivering value? Is it delivering what I want to do? If it does not provide value, then it should not be there. Okay, so next I've highlighted a load of bullet points, which are basically, in terms of practical actions, some of the most important things on triggering ILED are: recall is most likely to occur within 2 hours from the original error. If possible, therefore, allow an interval between restarting critical equipment. So you've got that 2 hour gap of the original error, so you've got to keep that in mind. So allow an interval between restarting critical equipment. Remember, we're talking about quite specific things here. There is a full document on this stuff by Justin R.E. Stewart, or the report, I don't know whether it's a report or a book, by CBC Press, but I shall find a link to that and put it on there. So if you want to look into this stuff a hell of a lot more, then you can do it via that link, hopefully. Let's move on to the next bullet point then. Encourage reflection during and at the end of the task, for example by using the stop, look and listen technique. I really like this. Encourage reflection at the end of the task. So it's kind of that the bell goes, you know, when I read it first time, I immediately thought about the school bell. The school bell goes, we stop and we run out of the room. Yeah, what if the school bell went and that meant that we just had 30 seconds reflection on the class, you know, on the lessons we've learned today? No discussion, we just sit and we just think. Now, some people sit there and think, you know, about whether they're going to kiss that new girlfriend at the weekend or whether mum's going to buy them that Xbox or whatever. But some people, in a lesson that has grabbed their attention, and remember what when I said earlier that it's not a one-trick pony, so you know it's got to provide value. So the reflection means that they're reflected on something that's grabbed their attention, specifically talking about kids here, but kind of that same thing at work. So especially in manufacturing, you have that kind of that bell that goes off, or it's break time, you might just have a big clock or whatever, and everyone just stops and walks out the room and goes. It's never that reflection piece. And you know, I'm not saying all roles need to do this, but you know, we're kind of teetering on the edge of like mindfulness here, you know, that kind of mindfulness throughout the role, but also at the end just stopping and thinking, what did I just do? Was it providing value? You know, if I get to the end of my podcast and I sit there and I think, did I like that? Was it good? How could I do it any better? So being mindful throughout the process, but then that period of reflection at the end, I really like that, and I really do think that a lot of businesses could benefit from that, regardless of how high or low your risk, the risk of your operations are. Next bullet point then, recall rates are increased by prompts such as checklists in work documents. Now, I'm not a massive fan of checklists, but I can see where they're going with this, especially for those kind of high risk tasks. You know, if you're going to have that checklist piece, then again, make sure it delivers value. I, in my years, have developed so many checklists that I would now go back and say, what the fuck is that? You know, why are we having this stuff? It's got to deliver value. I remember having an incident, and it was something around like a portable power tool. I can't remember what it was for the life of me, but something happened. It wasn't really bad. I think it was like a small rid, or and we put in this portable power tool checklist, which was done once, and that once was when that I was training the people on doing it. It was just never used again. Actually, the value came from what they learned on that little how to use this sheet. They still did it, but they didn't record it on the sheet because they never had the time. So it never really delivered any value, but I wasn't worried because we'd not had that incident again in a long time. Well, we never had it in the time that I was there. I had a look at all the tools myself when we did our kind of engineering workshop risk assessments, when we did any audits or anything like that, and they were always in really good condition from that point onwards. So I get where they're going with this. Remember this, you know, they're talking about some real high risk stuff here, and you know, you're probably going to have those kind of checklist pieces, and they probably do provide value in a lot of this stuff. You know, you have like a lockout tagout system, it's going to be quite heavily procedurally based and controlled for the right reasons, and so it should be. You know, if this stuff goes wrong, shit's going to really hit the fan. So I do really like this. Just remember to put it into context when you read it, if you do read it. Okay, next one. Visual prompts are especially effective. Perhaps a photo of the equipment as it should be in a safe state. It can be something as simple as a picture of a pen to prompt, have you written up the paperwork? I get this. I do get it. I've seen this stuff being used. It's used quite a lot. These are techniques that, you know, have come from these high-risk industries, and manufacturing industry especially has kind of taken this on board, probably engineering as well, and a hell of a lot of other industries probably. I do think it is that worry that it is not a one-trick pony. You know, this stuff is all about, you know, you've got to think back to what we were saying earlier, that, you know, it's not just, oh yeah, I'll do that, I'll get a picture of my machine of what it should look like, and then people will know what it should look like. But let's put this into context yet again, is that, so remember they said that in the Navy, we have many factors already stacked in our favour. For example, in a military environment, we're fortunate to have very highly trained and disciplined people who follow robust systems. What's more, they typically have a very high degree of safety awareness and consciousness. Remember that, because that's so important, that to say that if you just go and put these pictures and these prompts in place, it's not going to be enough. You know, are your people competent? Does the procedure work? Does it make sense? Do people understand it? Were they involved in it? This is culture. Culture is not this kind of floaty thing, that this spiritualism thing that is just full of, it's just fucking shit that millennials talk about. You know, it's all the pieces of the jigsaw in place, and just being able to sit back and realize that it's not a one-trick pony. I also think as well that it's worth considering you're not micromanaging people. So, you know, have you written up your paperwork? Again, come back to what I said earlier. Does that paperwork actually need to be there? And ask yourself, does it deliver value? Next one, take breaks between safety critical tasks. They maximize reflection and error recall. This, I absolutely bum this. This is spot on. You know, that kind of highlight those safety critical tasks in what you're doing. You could even utilize this for like quality. You could do any kind of that kind of quality critical task, that kind of safety critical, life critical task. Stop, think, reflect. Stop, think, reflect at these key points in your post. You know, you could even just use that as a point. Stop, have a cup of tea. You know, they don't need to go away and make a cup of tea. They could just stop and drink the tea that they made already, because let's be honest, everyone in England especially has got a cup of tea within the vicinity. You know, stop and think about what you've just done. I love the idea of doing that at critical points throughout a process. And I do think that has got some serious legs for a hell of a lot of businesses. Remember, it's not a one-trick pony, but I do think this is a great, great example. I loved it. So, last bit that I have highlighted, and then I shall close out and you can go on your merry way. People are most likely to be open about their recalled errors if you have a culture in which it's permissible to put your hand up and say, look, I think I've got this wrong, or I may have got this wrong. Conversely, stigmatizing those who report errors can only have a negative effect. I thought that was the best way to finish this podcast, if I'm honest. I couldn't have said it any better myself, but I'm still going to. It's so important that I think we can incentivize and we can do things like that 100%, but I think it's important to just realize that I tell you what it is, it's that kind of just culture piece, isn't it? It's that kind of, you know, yes, you've done something wrong, but you've rang, you've said, you know, I think I've done this wrong, then that's the most important thing to focus on. You know, the fact that they rang up, that is what you focus on, and you say, great, thanks. Not what you probably automatically react to, which is, you fucking idiot, which is probably the first thing that comes to your head. But what you need to do is go, shit, right, okay, thanks for ringing me, I'll ring you back, I'll let you know, I'm gonna have a look, cheers buddy, yeah, thanks a lot, bye. You know, that's what it needs to be. You're thankful, you're grateful, you're reacting in a positive way, you're saying thank you. They're gonna be fucking nervous anyway, because they've rang up and told you that they think they've made a mistake on probably what is a safety critical system, or it could just be a risky process. So they've already become nervous, they're already, you know, waiting on the end of the phone, because you can tell inherently what kind of person they are because they rang up. You need to encourage that 100%. You need to encourage that. You need to not chastise them because they made that mistake. What you do need to do is try to work out why that mistake was made and stop it happening again. And to stop it happening again is not bollocking that person. It's never going to get you anywhere. So 100%, thank you, jump on this, get it fixed, ring them back, say, nah mate, it was all good, you did it, thanks for ringing anyway, really, really appreciate that, have a great weekend. Yeah. Or you're ringing them up and you say, sorry, I didn't ring you straight back, mate, went down to the machine, yeah, I'm sorry to say, buddy, you did forget to shut that valve, it's all right, we fixed it now. When you're in, let's just have a chat. Let's try and work out what was going on at the time. If we can try and highlight any kind of distractions, or, you know, what was going on. Let's try and see if this is potentially a wider problem for anyone else, for any other areas of the factory. Don't worry about it for now. We fixed it. I really, really appreciate you giving me a call. This could have been so much worse if you hadn't called me. So thank you. Thank you very much. And that's the thing to take away this weekend, is that you rang up. We got it fixed. And I really, really appreciate your honesty. Have a great weekend, buddy. Honestly, I know this is going to get you down anyway, but please don't let it. Go and enjoy your weekend. I'll see you on Monday. And thank you again. For me, that's the best way to kind of approach this. You've got to kind of be self-aware if you're doing something like that. You've got to stop yourself and go, or let, you know, swallow that FU that you're thinking in the head, and just kind of approach this in a professional manner. You know, if it comes to the point where that person needs to be chastised, then I like the old saying of chastise in private and praise in public. I think that stands. You know, we can go lessons learned, but we don't need to be like, Dave left a valve open because he's a fucking idiot. And you're going to make sure that you're not a fucking idiot. You know, that's not the way we need to go with this. The other thing I think that last paragraph says is, you focus on that culture piece. And remember what I said earlier, that culture is a full jigsaw. You've got to focus on each individual part of the jigsaw. You've got to focus on each individual cog. I think you've also got to acknowledge that, in my opinion, there is no such thing as a health and safety culture. It's a business culture. You're never going to get a good positive mental attitude towards health and safety if the business creates an environment where they treat their staff like shit and people don't want to work there. If people don't want to work there, then it doesn't matter what I go as a safety person to say, let's do this, let's not do that. It doesn't matter, because they're already in a negative place. So I hope you've enjoyed that. I feel like these reading of articles is quite good, but let me know what you think. Tweet me, Safety Rebranded. You've got Facebook, Rebranded Safety. You can find me on LinkedIn as well, James McPherson on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter as well, JamesMcPherson8, I think it is. Anyway, everything's linked in the description. I hope you found this useful. Catch you next week, guys. Safe.